When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
Never in doubt. That's how we felt about the Seattle Mariners last night. You saw them no hit through seven innings, and you know what I thought and what I definitely texted the two of you? We're going to get this done. We are so back.
Lies. How are you starting off the show with lies?
What are you talking about?
Yesterday you did so good being honest and being humble, and then you come in with this nonsense.
Okay. I was unhappy. I was upset. I was angry that the Mariners' offense was being no-hit through seven, despite another solid day in which the pitching staff had given up just one run. And I was bothered that we were going to see a team do the thing that I had said I didn't want to do, which was that not just in a quality start, but in a very winnable game, no run support. I didn't want to see that. Not only was there no run support, there were no hits. You need those to get the runs. That's part one to step two. And you weren't seeing it. So, okay, fine. I will admit it. I was upset. But I can't come in here raging and throwing things around now. I can't even complain about being no hit through seven because they ultimately won thanks to a walk-off home run from Mitch Garver.
The stretch by Minter. Polanco a lead and the lefties 3-2 on the way. Swinging a fly ball deep to left field. And this one is goodbye baseball. A walk-off two-run home run for Mitch Garver. And the Mariners win it.
Good on Mitch Garver for proving me wrong, Bump, because I was convinced this game was over when they had bases loaded. Julio pops up, and then Mitch strikes out, and I was like, all right, game one, done.
Yeah, that was the opportunity right there. Everybody, I'm looking at my notes. Everyone registered a strike minus, I think, Rayleigh, obviously, because he came in late.
Yeah.
But, when you're in the eighth inning, you got bases loaded, Julio's up. He hits a little blooper out there. What's a left field, I believe it was. And then you got Haniger come up. He K's. You were thinking that was the opportunity right there. You had it all set up for you. Bases are jacked. If they can't do it here, you're probably not going to see it. But boy, were we wrong. I'm sad that Max's name isn't Fried. It's Freed. I was hoping that it was Max Fried. It just feels better, you know. but Freed was doing his thing too, man. Look at it was a pitcher's duel.
Yeah.
And that's something every now and then I'm here for. With this particular team, you don't want to see that because you feel like it's gonna be tough for these guys to pull off a win. But they were dealing out there. Miller was doing his thing. Miller came out and threw 13-14 straight four seams and said, look, you go ahead and try to hit this.
Yep.
I'm setting my day up with this pitch to where, as of late, we're seeing pitches across the league set things up with breaking balls and all that, all off speed and all that good stuff. But no, he said, look, I'm going with the heater to start the game. Y'all go ahead and touch it. It was a defensive battle, man. It was wasn't something that I want to see, but weirdly enough, I enjoyed this. This felt like a 6-3 football game, and you get into the fourth, and someone needs to score a touchdown and put it away.
Man, 10 strikeouts for Miller. Here's the 10th.
The 2-2. Strike three called. He locked him up with a splitter. It's a career night for Bryce Miller. 10 punchouts against the game's best lineup, the Atlanta Braves.
I cannot believe what Seattle starters are doing right now. And you know, the other thing, the other half of this, I also can't complain that the offense isn't doing enough so long as they're winning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If the offense was getting twice as many hits as they're getting and they were losing, I would be complaining. So if the opposite is true, they're not getting a ton of hits, they're not getting a ton of consistent offense, but they're winning, what can I do? I can't do anything except for point to what's working, and that is the pitching. From Cespedes Family Barbecue, the Mariners hit 175, 232, 358 with a 35% strikeout rate over the last week and went 5-2. That's how good the pitching is right now.
Yeah. An example of that pitching, Miller, 17 whiffs last night, 15 on that fastball. The Mariners starters have 17 straight starts allowing two or fewer runs. They're giving you a chance. And now you're just banking on the health and everyone, you know, being healthy, taking care of your arms and going through your rehab, your post-game, whatever you got to do to make sure you're ready to go. Because if this staff can continue to perform the way that they have been, they're going to be in the mix. You're going to need some games where you got to put up 6, 7, 8 runs. There are going to be games where you don't want to rely on a walk-off home run, even though that's one of the most fun things to watch is a walk-off. Man, I sent my kids to bed early, Stacey. I deprived them of this walk-off. I go, look, guys, it's over. Go ahead and go to sleep. I'll see you guys in the morning. Mitch goes yard. I'm hooting and hollering. They're like, dang, Dad, you messed us up. We're supposed to be watching. It's like, oh, my bad. Because with the way the bats were going, I did not see this happening. But resilient. If there's anything that we're learning from this team is that they're gonna fight. They're going to battle. But that's been the description of this team the last couple of years is that they're going to fight in these close, low-run scoring games. And we saw that last night, but it's all about Bryce Miller. He is something special. He added a couple pitches. He is confident. I love watching him doing this post-game conference with the hat turned backwards. I wanted to see what hat it was. It was clean. It was fresh. It's his demeanor. He seems like he's been here a while. You hear Cal talk about Bryson and what he's done. And big ups to Cal, too. Mm-hmm. Cal has to call a game. He's like an offensive coordinator. He's got to call the right pitches and set everything up. So for Cal to say, you know what, let's let the young fella throw the heaters to start the game, to set the tone, I think it was awesome. As soon as I saw Acuna struggle, I go, okay, we got a chance here.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't catch up to that heater.
Nelson in Kent says, you can very much complain. Can I? I mean,
you can.
Look, I am very frustrated because I know that this stretch of amazing play that the arms have had is not sustainable over the course of a season, over the course of a month. It's just not.
No, I need some
help.
It's
just not. You're not going to, as a pitching staff, post like a 1-4 ERA over 3 weeks. Like, that's just not going to happen. It is amazing to watch. It's crazy knowing that George Kirby allowed no runs or one earned run on Saturday, struck out 12, and that a couple days later, Bryce Miller struck out 10 and allowed a single run. Like, these are amazing performances. You can't keep that up. That's just baseball. That's human error. That's fatigue. That's just life. And the offense is going to eventually need to perform. But today, I was driving in, and I was thinking about it going, can I start a show complaining if they won? And not only that, but in a row, they have wins, not a series win against the Braves, but they have faced the Rangers, defending World Series champions, defending NL champions, the Diamondbacks. They took that series, and they just took a win from the Braves, one of the best teams in baseball.
I don't think we should complain, but it's okay to say, okay, eventually things got to get going offensively. It's okay to say that you cannot foresee this team going the bulk of the season performing like this and expect them to be in it when it comes to the playoff push late in the season. You look at Julio Rodriguez. I was looking at Julio and I go, look, man, if there's ever a day I'll accept you going over is if I see zero when it comes to the K in the on the stat sheet. At least he wasn't striking out. He hit a couple balls hard late in the game. He was looking for that sack fly, couldn't get it done. But there's a positive there, I guess. I always try to look for the positive, Stacey. That's just how I live my life. I prepare for the worst, hope for the best. Haggerty was out there for the first time this in, 17 games, I believe. Nice to see Haggerty out there. But no, there is concern. You got to get the offense going. But when you beat a team like the Atlanta Braves, right, one of the best teams in baseball, one of the best lineups in baseball, and your pitching shows that you can go toe-to-toe with the big boys, I think that's something to be celebrated. There's always going to be concerns. There was a texter who texted in, if JP is playing short last night, then I know maybe Miller does walk away with a no hitter. Who knows?
JP hasn't had a phenomenal day.
Hey, but still, JP's resume is a lot more better.
Also,
than
Ronald Acuña was the one running to first base. Let's not forget. He had like 70 stolen bases last year.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
It's a conversation though, right?
Sure.
But can't complain. Can be concerned, need to see a bit more with the bats. Let's see if Castillo can hop in and be the guy that we know and love.
From the 253, they don't need the best offense in baseball. If the Mariners' offense lived up to expectations and just had an average offense, they'd be one of the best teams in baseball. I do agree with that. I also know that this texter knows that they aren't average right now, that they are far below average offensively. They are one of the worst offensive teams in baseball. So, yeah, if they were average, if they were 15th, 16th in OPS, average, runs, anything like that, this team would be phenomenal with the way that these arms are. However, once in a while, you may need your offense to carry you. I am telling you right now, Bryce Miller or George Kirby or Logan Gilbert or Luis Castillo are going to have a game coming up here where they give up 7 runs, where they give up 6 runs, where they're pulled in the fourth, and it's just not their night. And we go, man, is he okay? What's up with this guy? And it's just not his night.
Yeah.
I saw Garrett Cole give up, what, like 4, 5, 6 runs to the Mariners, including like a home run to Jared Kelnick in like the first or second in that series last year against the Yankees. Like, we have seen aces have horrible games. It's just going to happen eventually. It's going to be coming up here. It's going to be around the corner. Yep. I'm not jinxing it. I'm just telling you how this works. And the offense will need to be better than average.
Yeah. It's called a team sport for a reason. There are going to be parts of the team or parts of the game where they're just not performing at some point. And to start the season, there's been more times when the bats aren't performing than the arms. So thank you for the arms for keeping this team relevant and in games and allowing opportunities like we saw last night for Mitch to go yard and win that thing. And big up Polanco, too, man. He hasn't had the greatest, what, 4 or 5 games when it comes to squaring the ball up. But he gets on base and applies some pressure as well. But, yeah, that's why it's a team sport. You got to pick each other up sometimes. So, yes, eventually you're going to have to pick these arms up. It might be tonight. Who knows? I hope it ain't tonight. I hope Castillo goes out there and looks good. But banking on this Atlanta Braves lineup having the same night they had last night, I mean, back-to-back games, isn't likely. So let's go. Help out your arms and support them.
Well, and then this is where you start looking at, like, hey, Julio. Like, this isn't just an offense full of average players, even though it is a below-average offense. This is a below-average offense with some stars.
Yeah.
Namely Julio. What's up?
What up, Julio?
Like,
what's up, baby?
This is a series where ideally his bat pops, like you start seeing something, and ideally that happens tonight. So it doesn't have to in order to win the series. Thankfully you got this win, but it's obviously something we're looking at kind of moving forward. But that being said, I don't want to underemphasize and not focus on enough how amazing the pitching has been, Bump.
Yeah, it's fun to watch these guys chase that four seamer high in the strike zone. It looks like a slow riser. It looks good. Last second, it rises up there, and he has these guys chasing it, man. Again, I mentioned the whiffs out there. It's fun. I never thought that I would. Well, I didn't say I never thought, but I typically love the 8-9 game, 8-10 game. But something like last night on both sides, it was just fun to watch, just how locked in these guys were. Then I was looking to see what Miller's demeanor was after he gave up that hit and just shrugged it off like nothing. And the post game presser, someone asked him, "Did you know that you had a no hitter going?" Of course he knew. He goes, "I go to the iPad, I look and see what's going on, but it doesn't change my approach." And he's already been a confident individual. But games like this, performances like this, just makes him even more and more confident, man. Cal was talking about that last night. He goes, look, he's a different guy. He has more weapons, more tools at his disposal. He can be aggressive with his fastball. He has other pitches, other good secondary pitches. It's fun to watch this young man develop. And to do it against this team was impressive, man.
From the 425, stars that can't hit aren't stars. I think Julio's leading your club in hits. But also, we've seen Julio do it before. What's frustrating is it's yet another slow start to the season, one he's had every single year so far. And when he was a rookie, you could kind of write it off because you're a rookie. You broke spring with the club. You're up here. You've got a lot to learn. Last year, the whole club started slow with the exception of Jared Kelnick. This year, you're kind of like, wait, what's going on? What's up with the slow start, Julio? Is it pressure? Is it, an approach? Like, what's going on here? But I have no doubt that Julio can hit and Julio can be great. Julio is not proven to me that he isn't a star or can't be.
Yeah, Castillo's been in the league for a while and he has a resume that says to start the season, it will be he typically comes out slow. He's not on point. The velocity's not there, the command or whatnot. But you know he's going to get going.
Mm-hmm.
It's safe to say, okay, we got 2 years and some change when it comes to Julio that that's just who he is at this point. He's going to start off slow. Would we love for him to start off hot? Yeah, but history says eventually he's going to get going at the pace that we know and love. It's not like he's horrible right now.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, he's leading the team in hits. His average is up there when it comes to the guys getting most of the ABs. So, yeah, we can be patient. I think we have to be patient. You have no other choice because he's shown you that he's going to pick it up. But let's pick it up tonight. How about
that? In Julio's defense, credit to another texter, 360, for pointing this out. You know who else has only one home run hitting 255 and fewer hits than Julio right now? Ronald Acuna Jr.
Mm.
Is anyone saying he's not a star?
No, not a star. I wonder, you know what I would like to, after the show, I'm going to go and just listen to Atlanta Braves radio and just see what they're saying about him. Like, are they panicking? Because Acuna says, look, you know I'm going to hit bombs. I'm going to steal 70 bases. Just relax. I'm going to do my thing. So I doubt that they're panicking the way that we are, but they also have a hell of a lineup. So
yeah, I don't think his struggles this season are felt as much as Julio's.
Not with that much talent around him, but that's also what makes Julio's struggles tough, is that he is so promising and so exciting and so talented, but because you have fewer Julio's on your roster. You don't have the top 10 players in baseball that the Braves do on your roster, though you feel that more. But I think anyone saying Julio isn't a star or can't be a star or has proven nothing is jumping the gun, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm eating crow down the road. I don't think I will, which is great because I don't want to do that. We're going to talk about the run Mariners pitching has been on coming up at 10:45. A vibe check on the Kraken coming up at 10:30. Before we get to it, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, ESPN NHL reporter Emily Kaplan says a handful of Kraken players made it known in exit interviews they would not want to stay with the team if Dave Hakstol remained head coach. What's the real headline?
I, too, have decided not to go somewhere if someone I hate will also be there.
Yeah. Don't go to the party. Hey,
not for me.
Hey, come to this party at so-and-so's house.
Who's
first
there?
Question, who's going to be there?
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, yeah?
Oh.
Actually, I got something to do tonight.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have a phone call to make.
And that's telling, man. He lost that team. And they were top 10 when it comes to goals against per game. They were ninth when it comes to save percentage. They just couldn't generate any offense. And what is that? People are saying towards the end of the season that the team looked like they lost interest in the game. They were done playing for Hakstol. So what is it about the culture that he creates and the scheme or whatnot that that has rubbed players the wrong way? Is it his communication? What is it, man? I wish we had an insider. Big ups to Andy Eyde. Rest in peace, my man. He'd be perfect in moments like this because I got questions. I got questions. You had a magical season last year. You get into the playoffs. You win a series. Things are looking great. How crazy things have changed within a year. Something tells me he didn't change his philosophy. Mm-mm. He didn't change who he was. Was it they just got lucky last year and the players were forced just to kind of go along with it? And then this year, you kind of see that you can't rinse and repeat and do what you did last year. I got so many questions. So we got to get somebody on the horn here eventually. I know we had Kate yesterday, but that was kind of fresh off the breaking news. I got to figure out what's going on because something ain't right.
Yeah, I have two things to say. First, getting back to the Julio conversation from the 425, he's 23. I wouldn't call him a star yet. I'm seeing so many people interpret being a star as quite literally the summation of your career or at the peak of your career. I'm talking about celebrity status, like star, who has star power. Julio has star power. It doesn't matter that he doesn't have a career to reflect back on or that he hasn't reached the pinnacle of his career. If you ask non-Mariners fans, if you pull 50 baseball fans from East Coast cities and say, name a Mariner, how many of them are not saying Julio Rodriguez? A handful. That's what I mean when I say star. I mean star power, that kind of like a celebrity status, the ability to be something great because you're kind of on this platform.
He is a star.
He's a star.
Not a superstar.
No, he's not a superstar, and he's also not like an all-time great. To me, like, it's not, star isn't the same as all-time great, one of the very best Hall of Famer. I don't use those synonymously. Star means you have superstar possibility. You're a celebrity.
Yeah, he's a star.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, as the next wave of free agency opens, the Seattle Times' Bob Condotta reports the Seahawks have remained in contact with Jamal Adams about a possible reunion. What's the real headline?
When the Seahawks go low, Jamal goes lower, is something we hope is happening with salary offers.
He's got no choice at this point. You're only as good as your offers. The league will let you know what they think about you. And unfortunate for Jamal Adams, the perception of him has changed as a football player, but you can't blame them. It's a lack of production and availability. So he's got to change his expectations a bit. I'm all for it. Explore every possibility, whether that be Rashad Penny, Jamal Adams, Ryan Neal, Quandre Diggs. It doesn't matter. You've gone through the draft. You've got these young guys in. You've already experimented with free agency. There's like another wave of free agency that happens after the draft and your voluntary workouts. They're supposed to be doing this because when Jamal is healthy, there's no denying who he is. Will he fit this defense? That's up for Mike McDonald and Dirty to figure out.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three. It's over for your Lakers, Bump.
Is it? Did we lose?
Bump didn't know.
They were eliminated last night by the Nuggets on yet another last-second shot by Jamal Murray. What's the real headline?
We can't tell if Lakers fan Michael Bumpus is happier this is the last time he'll see a Jamal Murray buzzer beater, or that this is the last time he'll see Bron in a Lakers jersey.
Bron was like, I'm not answering that question when they asked if he played his last game as a Laker. I wouldn't be surprised if he dips. If I'm LeBron, 39 years old, I'm arguably one of the greatest, but one of the greatest to ever play in this game. I got leverage. I'm going to wait and see where my son is drafted, if he is drafted, and then I'm going to try to cut a deal with that team. The thing that makes me think he's going to stay in L.A. is that he's into this production and Hollywood and all that. And, of course, being on the West Coast is an advantage. But I wouldn't rule anything out. I wouldn't even be mad if he did. I'm fine with starting all over and trying to create a team that my kids, when they're late in their teenage years, can be proud of, because this has been an experiment. Thank you for your service. If you dip, it's all good. If you stay, get young and make some trades.
Can I tell you guys something I'm upset about? It's not that Boston, a sports city I don't particularly like, but that Celtics team is great and should win it all. They've advanced. It's the OKC also advanced. They are a fun team if you are not from Seattle to talk about and watch this year. How far do you think they can get?
OKC? The youngest team to win a series in NBA history. I believe the average age is like 23 points something on that team. Crazy. I think they can get to the Western Conference Finals. After that, I think they go down because of their youth. But it's been fun to watch. I know we're supposed to hate them in Seattle, but if you like just basketball, it's fun to watch a young team do the things they've been doing.
I just hate the idea of OKC continuing to win. And it's not their fault. You know what I mean? I'm like Goodwill Hunting. It's not your fault. It's not their fault. But I don't ever want that franchise to win anything.
Yeah. Here's my question. A statement and a question. The statement is that, again, our generation is cooked. Steph Curry didn't make the playoffs. He had the playing game. LeBron is gone. KD is out that thing as well. Where does KD go? Does he stay with the Suns? I don't think he's staying. I think he's going to dip. And if I'm him, why not go back to Oklahoma City and help the young guys out and see
might
what's going
well.
On?
Well, I mean, if you are chasing opportunity,
as you should at this point in your career,
at this stage in your career,
go chase the rings, man.
Yeah, sure. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. We're going to have a vibe check on the crack and an interesting story to look back on as they search for a new head coach. Don't go anywhere.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
The Mariners are all about giving you more baseball for your buck. With Mariners Value Games, you can snag seats for as little as $10 to select games all season long. To get your tickets and check out the complete Mariners Value Game schedule, go to mariners.com/valuegames.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
911, what's your emergency?
Someone on every line saying they kidnapped my son.
On September 12, 1995, McKay Everett disappeared from his home in Conroe, Texas.
There was no sign of forced entry. It was just as if McKay had walked out of his own free will.
And to this day, McKay's mother, Paulette, feels that justice was never truly served. Ransom is available now. Listen at ransompodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Hey, Curtis, can Bump and I get a vibe check on the Kraken? Would you mind?
It's down bad.
Oh, down bad. Down bad. Real Things bad. Aren't going so great. So the Kraken have fired head coach Dave Hackstall. And on top of that, interesting report from Emily Kaplan. Take a listen.
What I can tell you is that Ron Francis did not want to make this move. Dave Hackstall is now one of four coaches who lost their jobs this cycle who didn't even have their extension kick in yet. But I was told at the exit meetings with players, there was a handful of players and pretty significant players who made it clear to management, I don't want to play on this team in the future if Dave Hackstall is still the coach. And that forced them to make a change. Paul McFarland, an assistant, also didn't have his contract renewed.
Do you know how far into my forehead my eyebrows are right now, Bump? They are far. They have risen very high.
Why look at your forehead, though, when you said that?
I'm wearing a hat. Joke's on you. Very interesting report from Emily there that a number of players, including high-profile players, told the Kraken, we aren't playing, we aren't doing anything if Hackstall is here.
Yeah, that's telling, because that's a majority type of thing. If they're like one or two guys, and I would assume the NHL is not like the NBA where one guy has all the power. LeBron gets guys out of there. Giannis gets Doc Rivers in, and they go, what, two games over 500 as Doc being the head coach. The NHL has a different profile when it comes to player coach, player organization, player media type relationship. So the fact that these guys came together and said, this ain't it, says a lot. And I mentioned it in what was it, a headline rewrites. I go, what exactly is going on? Because this same coach got a fairly new team into the playoffs last year and almost got to the Western Conference Finals. What changed during that time? Is he not developing the young players? Is he not communicating with the veteran guys? Does he have the lines all mixed up? What exactly are these guys complaining about? We know what the results are. We can look at the wins, the loss, the goals against, the goals for, and we can say, all right, this isn't a very good team. Something isn't clicking. We can look at the roster and say, they don't have the guys on the ice that the other, these contenders do have. That's the obvious. It's the day-to-day. It's the practice. It is the pre, the post, the during the game. There's something that's off with Hackstall. And that was always my question when it came to his personality, is that the first thing I do is I look at guys when they're on the bench, whether it be the players or the coach, especially the coach, and I put myself in that position and say, could I play for this guy? Could he get me going? Mm-hmm. As a professional, you get yourself going, but you still got to get coached. You still got to be coached. There's something going on with that. His demeanor wasn't one that I would call inspiring or enthusiastic, and maybe that's what's missing, but it's telling when the players say, look, we ain't standing for this.
Now, for his part, GM Ron Francis said the decision to fire Hackstall wasn't based on those exit interviews.
I think you're careful on exit interviews. I think you talk about things, but that wasn't what we made this decision based on.
So what was the decision based on?
You know, we're looking at our organization and, you know, just looking at the season, I thought we were a little more inconsistent than we had been, you know, a few too many losing streaks and losing streaks of significant numbers. And so we just felt it was time to try a new voice here.
Now, Ron Francis saying that the decision to fire Hackstall not being made on exit interviews doesn't mean Emily Kaplan's report isn't right.
He's not, and he wouldn't come out and say, yeah, man, we're listening to the players. And sometimes I wish they would be real and say, we take that into consideration, because you definitely do take that into considerations. I think GMs have to walk a fine line when it comes to revealing too much information or withholding too much information. And if the streets are talking, if the streets are saying players aren't happy in that situation, I think it can be acknowledged without saying we leaned heavily on that. But they're never going to come out and say that. So, yeah, there's a lot that goes into the decision. I think the losing streaks obviously have something to do with it. I think maybe player development has something to do with it. But the old heads are the ones who have the loudest voices in those locker rooms. And the old heads came out and said, Hackstall ain't it.
And I think, so I was on Seattle Kraken Reddit, because I know the least, I'm just going to be completely blunt, out of all the sports I covered, of hockey. I'm new to hockey. I didn't watch NHL a ton growing up, and so I started watching more religiously when the Kraken obviously became a team. So I still turn to like fan takes and fan opinions to be like, well, what do they think about that? Like, does this make sense? So obviously when Hextall was fired, I was like combing through and I was like, well, what are people saying about this? Like, what's, you know, what can I glean from this? So shout out to Seattle Kraken subreddit. But they posted an article from Dave Hextall's time with the Flyers when he was fired. And there was a lot of crossover in terms of maybe not the most like energetic, upbeat guy, that the system was pretty simple, that they would have long stretches of win and loss streaks, that they wouldn't have great home records, like that there just was some carryover between what didn't work out in Philadelphia and what didn't work out in Seattle. In Hextall's defense, it's not like the Flyers have gone on to be a phenomenal franchise in his absence. Like, since firing him, it's not like they've gone on to be, like, the best thing on the planet. They had problems outside of Dave Hextall, and so did the Kraken. The Kraken have talent problems. The Kraken have talent acquisition problems. Like, there are problems outside of Dave Hextall. You just can't have a head coach that exacerbates those issues. You need to find one that can help fill holes. And so that's what I hope Ron Francis does here.
Yeah, I like that. The head coach, he has to work with the roster that he has. But good head coaches put their players in the best positions to be successful. And they scheme to highlight their strengths and hide their weaknesses. Again, I don't know enough hockey to tell you that Hextall did exactly that. But when you're talking to players and you hear from players and they're not agreeing with what's going on the ice, the majority of them, you would have to say he's not doing that or didn't do that. I think we had a couple conversations with Hextall, and one-on-one conversations with him, I for sure hung up the phone and we were off air and I said I can play for him. I watched him during the game. I go, I need a bit more from him. So scheme has a lot to do with it. There are a lot of head coaches who lose their jobs every single year. This is not outside the norm when it comes to professional sports. What's outside the norm is when you get a bunch of guys saying that, all right, we just can't play for this guy on this type of team. Football's a bit different. There's too many voices out there. There's really only one that matters. It's Hall of Fame type quarterbacks who has any type of influence on a football team. In basketball, 12 guys on the roster, you got a superstar. There's influence there. But in hockey, at least in my experience in hockey, I don't hear this very often. And you know what? Four years he was at the head? 4 years, am I right? Hextall?
At the Flyers? Yeah, or here?
No, here.
Three years when they played, but he was here like
including
a
candidate last year for the Head Coach of the Year award, right? Not the winner, but he was a finalist. So, I mean.
Yeah, so, I mean, he put in 3 years, and the team didn't progress the way that you wanted to. So, another question I have. Okay, if all it takes is one bad year at following a good year to get rid of this guy, were they looking at what happened last year and said, that was lucky as heck? I don't know how we did that. That had to be like, because he didn't change the system. You are who you are as a coach. So, that's what's confusing as well. One good year, one bad year, now he's gone. So they must not just believe in the philosophy.
I think hockey is also much more reactionary than other sports. Curtis, do you remember what the stat was that Ryan S. Clark had about, like, not only midseason firings, but total coach firings for head coaches in hockey just vastly outpacing the head coach firings in Major League Baseball, the NBA, or NFL, that it just happens at a much faster clip and a quicker turnaround.
Yeah, before Hextall got fired, I think he was like top five in the NHL in terms of longest tenured head coaches with their current team, which is wild because the Kraken have only existed for three seasons. He's also the 17th different head coach firing in the NHL since the start of last season, so 22-23.
That
more and than I know half I'm, the league is
I
changed.
Know I'm saying that knowing there were 8 head coaching openings to begin the year for the NFL, but only two of those head coaches were fired mid-season. Frank Reich, was that last season? God, I'm totally
yeah, blanking. He got fired. Yeah.
Frank Reich and Brandon Staley, I want to say.
Yeah, he got fired.
Yeah. But it's so part of it is the nature of the NHL, but Bump, it's a really, really good question about like when you're thinking about where you are as an organization, where are you pointing? How much faith did you actually have in your head coach? Is it a problem if you gave said head coach an extension and didn't have a lot of faith in him and thought it was mostly luck? And also, to kind of build off of what you're saying, are you, Ron Francis, taking a very realistic look at where your roster is right now? Or are you going to bring in another head coach? Is another guy going to fall on the sword? Or are you going to be able to go look?
That's the thing. Get rid of the head coach, but do something with that roster, too.
Right. And
Hackstall's not the guy in charge of building that roster. That comes from upstairs. So take accountability. You're not going to fire yourself, obviously. But you got to make some type of move, and Hackstall was that move.
Jeff Passan has a historical perspective on how good the Mariners' pitching has been. Don't go anywhere.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
911, what's your emergency?
Someone on every line said they kidnapped my son.
On September 12, 1995, McKay Everett disappeared from his home in Conroe, Texas.
There was no sign of forced entry. It was just as if McKay had walked out of his own free will.
And to this day, McKay's mother, Paulette, feels that justice was never truly served. Ransom is available now. Listen at ransompodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you're running the hurry up and don't have time for your favorite Seattle sports show, listen to the podcast on demand.
How about that? Unbelievable.
What a thought. Every hour, every interview, every look behind the scenes.
It's Geno Smith.
Competition brings out the best in everybody.
If I were a Seahawk fan who wasn't listening to that, I would have to hear that.
Find us on SeattleSports.com, the Seattle Sports app, or wherever you get podcasts.
Oh, it's fun.
It changes everything. Never miss a minute of Seattle Sports, your home for the Seahawks and Mariners. Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Jeff Passan was on Brock and Salk this morning talking about the historic run the Mariners pitching staff is on. And you guys, once you hear the perspective, you still can't believe it.
I wanted to understand just how good the Mariners pitching had been. So went to Fangraphs and punched in like a date calendar, like statistics by date. It was 11 runs in 10 games. It was like a 1.11 ERA. And I went and looked at that stretch. And historically, like since the turn of the century, I think only two other teams had done it. And it was a Giants team that won a World Series, and it was an Astros team that won a World Series.
Again, Logan Gilbert tied for first in the league in quality starts. You've got Bryce Miller in there with four. George Kirby's doing amazing things. I mean, this entire staff, most of these guys would be a one on any staff. Like, maybe not every particular one. I mean, plenty of other teams have like a great ace, but it is every single night you've got a chance.
Yeah, and they're doing it in a different trend than the rest of the league, or at least how these teams were attacking the Mariners to start. What was it? Spin the ball, right? Mm-hmm. Off speed, breaking balls. They can't handle it. Last night I'm watching, obviously, the game on Root Sport. They flash a graphic, and I go, all right, they call it the four-seam fastball factory. This homestand. Emerson Hancock threw 41 four seams. You got Kirby with 48, Logan with 32, and Bryce Miller with 59. You got five whiffs when it comes to Emerson, 18 with George, six when it comes to Logan, 15 when it comes to Bryce. They're aggressive. They're not only up on the mound and being dominant and hitting their spots and having these moments. They are aggressive. They're going against the trend. And to me, that's just an indication of just a really confident and powerful rotation.
Yep.
I love to see it. And with Emerson kind of finding his footing, that brings some stability to this thing, because to start the season, it was Emerson and Castillo to where when it was their day to pitch, there was a little bit of doubt. I think with Castillo, you always feel like he's going to get things going. He'll be fine. Mm-hmm. But more doubt with Emerson just because of his inexperience on this level. But yeah, they're an aggressive bunch. They're a confident bunch. And they are what makes this team go. But we all knew that going into the season. That's why the loss of Brash was concerning. That's why we wanted to see Santos out there, see how he was going to help this bullpen. But even with the bullpen, they have found a way to be consistent and not let some of these hiccups deter them.
Yeah, I think it's a good point about not letting any hiccups deter them. And also not letting any moment be too big, which I think that because it was happening during the draft and everyone was so hyper-focused on the NFL draft, obviously it's like the biggest sports story of the weekend, we kind of glossed over how important that series win was against the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks were like second or third in the league in runs heading into that series. We know that Texas's offense, even if the record isn't absolutely stellar, can be incredibly dominant and that lineup is incredibly deep. And we know what the Braves offense can be. These are big moments and the guys are still delivering. I mean, the strikeouts to walks rate is leading the league. Strikeouts per nine is third in team ERA. I think they're third in the league. I mean, these are dominant types of performances, not just like, oh, you're getting lucky and you're having some wins. This is dominance.
When you lead the league in quality starts, that lets you know just how clean and dominant that this rotation is. They're tied at 18 at the top with the Philadelphia Phillies. You look at their team ERA, what are they, third in the league with 3.03 earned runs. I hate talking about it because I don't want to jinx it. I don't want to bring some bad vibes into this, but I don't think some people really realize exactly what they're looking at. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to sit there and I'm texting Ryan Roland Smith throughout the game to get his perspective. I'm listening to our pre and our post game. And regionally, I think we kind of realize what we're seeing and how dominant this is. And I think that's why it's important that they hop on this opportunity and the bats get going. That's why people are concerned about Julio, because I think they see what the rotation is doing and saying,
yeah,
all right, these guys need some help. That's why I'm happy for Mitch. I believe that was his first ever walk-off home run, and he's been struggling a little bit. You want to see those things. That's why I was happy for Polanco, because you're saying, look, if this some of these guys can get going at the same time, we could see a 6-7-8 game win streak. And what that does, it provides confidence for these guys on the mound, mm-hmm. and it allows you to get in front of everything, because the Astros ain't playing good baseball right now. The A's are playing better than expected. So are the Angels, but there's opportunity right here to get this thing going. So it's been fun to watch, and these arms are dominant, but they're going to need some help. And they're going to need it quickly, because I don't think the Atlanta Braves are going to show up today and you're going to have the same thing happen like it did last night.
An interesting thing about all of this is that you're watching this performance knowing that one of these starters, Hancock, is eventually going to be sent down to AAA when Brian Wu returns. Here's what Passan said about what the Mariners should do there.
I think the discussion is, do you send Hancock down and let him, you know, remain stretched out and throwing innings, or do you explore the possibility of keeping Emerson Hancock up as a 3+ inning reliever who, if need be, you could stretch right back out, but a guy who can, if not allow you to save your bullpen, then certainly pitch like productive leverage innings.
I am intrigued by this.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling about it?
I'm intrigued by it as well. I'm looking at the pitches that he throws, right? He relies on his four-seamer 35% of the time. He's got a sinker 26% of the time, changeup at 28, and slider at 17. Like, what pitches would he rely on the most? And I think I like that idea because it allows him to still get that experience, right, without having to go out there and have the pressure of going six innings and less than three runs, because that's what you're going to need for this team to win ball games as of late. I'm all for it, because when we first saw Emerson Hancock, it was a bit shaky, but you see the improvement every time he goes out there. There's nothing like reps at this level. You can send him down to AAA and he can go out there and dominate and do his thing, but it's almost fool's gold sometimes, because we see pitchers dominate at that level. We see batters dominate at that level. Then they get up to the big leagues and something happens. So mm-hmm. keeping him around, I think, is beneficial, because then he's learning from these guys too. This is a young staff minus Luis Castillo. They're all kind of developing together, and I love the mix of this. So just him being around this ball club, I think, is more beneficial than him being sent down. But whatever they decide, I believe in it, because they've shown that when it comes to developing arms, they're solid in that department.
I absolutely believe in the pitching as well, and believe in the decisions that they're going to make there. Do you guys believe in Julio? I think the answer should quite obviously be yes, but Bump, I was so surprised to see how much reaction our conversation about whether or not Julio is a superstar was getting on the Mac and Jack's text line. So let's get back to it. It's coming your way next.